Welcome to Take It From Us with host Kent Johns. Real people, real voices, real lives. Discussing mental health, addiction, and disability in the community. Your weekly window to the real world. Welcome to Take It From Us.
How good would it be to have a special talent? I wouldn't know. I've never really had one, to be honest. But Wayne Webb does. He's an absolute gun at beach art. He and his partner Ayana head to New Brighton Beach in Christchurch every day to write messages of hope and love on the sand. And they write these messages with rakes. And I've seen a few of them. They're absolutely brilliant. Wayne has come from a troubled past, an addiction to alcohol and codeine pills, feeling lost and feeling suicidal. But now the art and the time on the beach is a balm for him. And more than that, it's having an effect on others as well. Wayne is extremely thoughtful, compassionate, and grateful for his life now. His is a story that will resonate with many of you. It certainly resonates with me. And I love Wayne's quiet enthusiasm for life. I hope you enjoy listening to Wayne as much as I did. Hey, Wayne, bloody good to have you on Take It From Us.
Thank you very much for having me on.
How's life?
Bloody good, mate. If I look back a few years and look back what I've got now, I think I'm doing bloody well, Brent. You know, but still a normal human being, and some days are different than others, and you know, not every day is a good day, right? Because it's just not how it is. It's not realistic. But I mean, you know, mindset, eh? And I always believe that. Well, I was taught by Joshua Gardner, chap here in Christchurch. He said, Wayne, you know, idle hands, mate, does your brain. And that's who I am, you know. So if I'm not doing something, if I'm not active, then the mind's overactive, especially if I'm feeling a bit down, then I'll just run with some shit thoughts and then run it into a shit storm in my head and yeah, give myself a bad day. So, you know, busy hands is the best way to get away from it, I feel.
Thoughts are fascinating because in one sense they're totally harmless because they're just thoughts. They don't necessarily mean anything. They are not things that you necessarily agree with. They're not things that you would necessarily do or follow through with. But on the other side, they're bloody damaging too because our brains can just become slaves to them and we find that we can't find another path out of there.
Well, I worked it out this year really that, you know, we talk about gaslighting and, you know, you can say something to me that's negative and then I can go at the start think, oh, piss off, mate, I'm not taking a bar of that. But in 2 days' time, I'm having a bit of a bad time in the south for whatever reason. Then I dwell on what you've said, then I take 1% of that, and then I run with it, and I self-gaslight myself. And I believe that's what we do with the mental health sort of things too when we're usually, unstable, unwell, however you want to put it, you know, not feeling right, that we gaslight ourselves. We certainly do. And we're damn good at it, you know, can be. And I thought I was pretty much an expert at it really when I look back. You know, I was great at being master to myself and really, really shit at being kind to myself, you know. It was taking a bit of a process to spin that round most of the time, you know what I mean? And, no, life is good, and I'm grateful.
Yeah. What are you most grateful for?
That's a good question. Well, if you're quite emotional thing about that, because I'm grateful for a lot of things, but I think, realistically, for life itself, you know, to be able to still be breathing and to be able to make choices still and still be able to work through my stuff, you know, things you've still got going on, you know, and yeah, I'm grateful for the air I breathe and life itself, really, in a nutshell. Grateful my parents had me, you know, and grateful that they stuck by me, what they have. Yeah. Of course, grateful for the beach, because that's been the game changer. I say to people that the beach really is my chemist and my pump. And it's true. So anything that unwinds me, like like the other shit used to, or so I thought. But nothing like this, you know. There is no comparison. Yeah. Yeah, it's been a pretty interesting year, really. It's been great. The standout side of things always is intertwined with mental health. That's why I got into it. But I can just see it growing, which leads to more opportunities. And like I've always said to everybody, you know, screw the fame. I don't want the fame. That's just not who I am. But I've always said to people, if you talk about the mental health, if you talk about my beach yard, talk about the reason why I do it. You know, so people like myself and there's, you know, there's some people out there just like me. They struggle from time to time that need to understand that, you know, it's a shit day. It will pass. And, if you're not doing well, get off your goddamn bum and go and do something, you know, that involves your legs, go for a walk or go and make something, you know, just go and do something, you know, go to the library, go draw, just whatever, go see a friend, go sit somewhere and do nothing. That's better than sitting at home doing nothing, I feel. Go see, you know, I mean, like at the beach, so you got some sounds and the other things to look at to entertain you, take your mind off things, you know, a little distraction. It's always good, but yeah.
So the beach art for you has had a profound impact on your life. Tell us all about it.
It's crazy, really. I think they're like this. I've had a few jokes to friends over the years about, you know, if somebody had said to me, hey, Wayne, why don't you take a rake down the beach and draw, mate? You're pretty good at drawing anyway. I would have laughed at them. I thought, you're bloody mad, mate. Not for one, I wouldn't have known how to do it, but just, I would have had zero interest. I probably would have found it boring if I think about it. No way, you know? And especially if it was sober, like, what the hell? Where's the fun in that? I look back that everything I did involved alcohol or drugs in some shape or form. To the point I wasn't intoxicated, I couldn't go and do it. You know, just like, a chaotic world, really. I think about it, but like, I don't know. There's something about being on the sand, bare feet. I'm aware that my feet are on the sand. You know, I don't feel the cold so much for the feet. I think the last 5 years, I think three times I've said to myself, gee, my feet are a bit cold, but it's in the winter too, you know what I mean? I'm just used to it, really. But it's just the mental reset from it. And then the recognition when I can do something that I think's cool too on the beach, you know. But I also remember too that when I first started drawing, I thought what I was drawing was all right. People still thought it was cool, but now that I've really stepped up my game and learned a lot more, I've got to realise that these people are seeing it, you know, possibly for the first time, and they're blown away at it, really. I just can't believe it's even on sand. You know, especially some of the cars and things I draw, because I really do try and put as much shading into the stuff as possible to make it to be as real as possible on sand, you know. Especially the 3D stuff I've been starting to get into that I'm starting to teach myself, you know. It's got to look right, and you've got to stand in a certain position to be able to see it too as well. But, you know, look, I'm blessed, Jim, with that, you know.
Well, it's a real skill that you have, real ability. To be able to produce, I've seen some of your stuff. It's amazing to think that a person would be capable to produce that on sand.
Yeah.
And it sounds like you're still trying to improve and you're still learning about your craft.
Yeah. But I'd actually believe this, that I could teach almost anybody in 20 minutes what I've learned in 5 years, and they can draw some of the technical stuff that I can draw. And once they figure out there's a formula, and you want to break it actually down, look at it bit by bit, it's not actually that hard at all. I'm just doing a jigsaw puzzle, really. And people say, well, how do you see it on the ground? And I say to them, well, if I can't see it, I can't draw, can I? You know, I have a bit of a giggle about that, because if I can't see it, I can't draw it. But if the best way I can describe really to see how I see it, to what I want to draw, is to lay a picture flat on the table in front of you and stand back and look at it. Because that's what I see on the ground. It's just laying flat. And I'm fully aware that if I'm drawing from the pier and I'm drawing further out and I'm going huge, I have to enlarge, well, not always, but sometimes I have to enlarge in the top part of the picture so it doesn't look out of place with the bottom part of the picture because it's further away. And that's when a lot of my stuff really should really be drone shotted all the time because the perspective is really from above because I'm drawing it to scale on the ground from above. But I'm just lucky that I have the pier and I've learned, I really have learned the technique to draw at the pier. When I drew down in Timaru last week, I drew the Timaru lighthouse and from the cliff face, it looked so out of shape. It was almost comical to me. But from the drone shot, it was damn near perfect. And that's the thing, you see, always working with those perspectives, you know, how to get it right and how the public's going to see it from the angle of the pier, especially from where they stand too, because if you stand in the wrong spot, it looks so off. You know, some things just look totally wrong, you know.
How long does it take you to complete the scene?
At the start, it was 4.5 to 5 hours, 5.5 hours. Now I can push that stuff out in about 50 minutes. And it's a relief to get the speed up with that too. Because, I mean, it's a great fun to draw, but I don't want to be out there for hours and hours, especially if I've got other things to do. You know, I've always got other things to do, but I tend to work what I'm doing. Everything else in life really goes on the back burner unless it's, you know, something that has to be done. I'll work around the tides. Because if I don't do that, then my mental health is off kilter. And then, you know, as anybody's experienced with mental health, you ain't right. Everything's hard. So I choose to go draw on the beach every day if I possibly can, twice a day, without fail. You know, and if I can get even on a wet day, I and myself, we have this thing that we believe if we want a 2-hour window to go and draw, it'll be fine for us. And no bullshit, 99.9% of the time over the 5 years we've been doing it, we get that. And it's, you know, you can rule your life by looking at the weather, or you can get up and just go and see, you know, and hope where you go on at the time that you're there that you'll have a dry patch to do what you want. And that's what we generally get. It's quite ironic, really. But, you know, I guess, you know, when you're putting attention out there too, not saying we can change the weather, but I feel like we get a lot of good luck, you know. But I mean, you know, you create your own good luck too, right? So if you think that way, then what's the possibility then? I just feel like you increase your possibility that, you know, that sort of in life in general, you know.
What are some of the messages yourself and your partner, Ayana, are throwing out there?
Ayana's is pretty different, really, like as in, she does a lot of mental health things. But she gets right into her spiritual side of things and she gets right into her symbols and that end things. And, yeah, she enjoys that side of the stand out. But she does her cartoon characters too. Totally loves things like Winnie the Pooh because of the positive sayings that are in it. And they have the cool little cartoon characters too, to draw as well. And that always lifts your spirit, you know what I mean? Whereas myself, I don't know. I'm all over the place, really. As in, I could draw a Chevrolet convertible today and tomorrow I might go and write something to do with suicide, you know, maybe it's a suicide bereavement for somebody and get a bit passionate about it and write whatever I like, you know, just depending what day it is. Look, if it's 5:30 in the evening, it's going to get dark soon, the tide's almost going to wash it away. Yeah, I'll write Fuck Suicide, Choose Life. True writer, well, because I get so frustrated with the shit, you know? If I really do. The amount of people, and I'm talking about the peer and talking about mental health and just suicide in general, the amount of people that want to jump off the pier is incredible. You know, and the amount of people I meet up there and have a conversation with them and then, I don't know, I have this thing, I believe that generally within about 3 minutes, they're telling me the deepest, darkest secrets, you know, how they're really coping or not, you know, which is a privilege, right? You know, that they trust me to say, hey, man, this is what's really going on, you know, and of course I recognise it too, you see, But it costs nothing to be kind and to give someone a time of day just so they feel heard, you know? No, I feel that.
Yes.
I'm an emotional bugger, I tell you.
Yeah.
Have you been in their shoes where you know what it's like for
many, many times
to want to check out?
Oh, fuck you, heaps. Yeah. Mm. It'd be impossible to count the times. Put it up. Was it a long-term relationship? Three kids. I look back now in hindsight and think I whipped myself up into being pretty bloody unwell when I think about it. Erratic thinking, just not normal thinking. In hindsight also, with knowledge now that it was definitely suicidal tendencies, as in like quite fixated on. But I also realised what was driving that was I was just sad. Extremely sad. So for 8 years, I had, you know, been suicidal. But yeah. And he, you know, get found out and things are said and stuff like that, which aren't normal stuff, you know. And then eventually someone, you know, that cares, picks up on it, you know. Which is a good thing. Yeah, it's been hard. And I think that's why, you know, I'm extremely grateful now to realise, you know, I'm in a bloody best place compared to where I used to be. Yeah.
So are you able to land into that when you're having a rough day or a bad patch? You have a point of reference, which is a hell of a lot deeper and darker than where you are today.
Oh, damn right. Yeah, shit, yeah. Yeah, and I say to people, learn to build a mental health toolbox. As in, like, your portable beer kit you jump into for yourself. But I'm also aware, too, when you're super stressed out, Ken, and you're in a dark spot, it's very, very hard to go and pull one of those tools out. And I believe that a lot of people, like myself, was sit in almost like a stubborn pattern, like not wanting to change, like wanting to sit in my shit a little bit. No. I recognise that with myself, and I do see it in other people. As opposed to getting up and going, doing something about it, like literally just getting up off out of the chair, stop sitting there looking down at the floor, you know, and go and get proactive, go do something. Sort of walk around the block, you know, just anything that breaks that bloody cycle, to break that frozen period, you know. But it's always easier said than done.
Nah, I like that phrase, frozen period, or I can identify with it. I certainly don't wouldn't be. I don't like being in that frozen period, but it's a great descriptive term because in the moment, you feel like just moving, getting off the couch, walking outside is the biggest bloody effort in the world.
You tell you what it is.
Even though it's bloody, what's the right thing to do?
It's the best way to say this, Alf.
Yeah.
You know, I say to people, you know, I can't save you, man. But if you want to listen to some of my stuff, you know, how I do my stuff, just maybe that may work for you too, or you alter it however you want. And make it work for you, you know. But no, look, like I say, Joshua Gardner did say to me, busy hands, bro, you know, more settled brain. And I always, that's my first go to. You know, once I get myself unstuck, and if Ilana sees that, she'll come over and say, hey, man, you know, I can see what's going on here. Perhaps you should go and do something. And that's what I need. And that gentle little push to get off my bum and stop just sitting here and feeling not sorry for myself, but, yeah, just feeling stuck, eh? To me, it's a bit like anxiety. Anxiety is paralyzing if you get it bad, literally paralyzing, where you're almost stuck to the floor or stuck in that chair, whatever, you know. But yeah, once again, you know, the best way to conquer anxiety is to go and confront it. Put yourself in amongst that fear and teach the fear that, nah, I'm the boss here. You know, and like you say, you know, about the four patterns and stuff, I'm the boss of my own thoughts no matter what. And I say to people, your hands can't tell you unless you move them. And you've got to make that decision. You've got to think about that. And that's why I really would like the narrative change from suicide to self-murder, to hashtag self-murder, because that's what it is. Because if you plan to kill somebody and you go ahead with it and you do it, that's murder. So if you plan your own death and you execute yourself, that's self-murder. It's not suicide. I don't think suicide sounds so weak. You know, such an old term now, it doesn't have much punch, I don't believe. You know, it's definitely self-murder no matter what, however you look at it. And it's definitely confronting to say it that way, but it's factual. You know, that's what the act is, right? You know, busy brain ain't a good for anybody, especially if they're struggling mental health-wise. And, you know, getting moving is definitely a good thing. And being around like-minded people that want to do beautiful sounds is a bonus as well, you know. Circles everything.
When life sucked for you, what were your coping tools?
Oh, when it was bad, for decades, it was just drugs and alcohol. You know, realistically. I used to think going on a roller motorbike was what I was doing, but bullshit, because I'd take alcohol with me as well. You know what I mean? If I was going on a dirt bike, be tussed as. And then I'd think I was a better rider because I was loose, you know, and relaxed, but not at all, just more crazy and probably just more lucky I got away with the stunts that I pulled, you know, by riding like an idiot, you know what I mean? But, you know, here's my thoughts on drinking, especially if you can't handle it and you've got a problem with it. It's just the last form of suicide because you're killing yourself slowly. And that's what it does, you know. And there's a reason why they die later today, otherwise it'll kill us. It was 100%, it'd kill us. So that tells me in itself, you know. Ain't the best thing for us anyway, but, you know. Oh, look, you know. Have I got all the answers? No, not at all. But I feel like I know a little bit. And learn some hard lessons and have some pretty good lived experience, really. And I feel like I should share with the country. You know. Yeah. And I say to people, you know, no one's coming to save you. It's because it's the truth, right?
Yeah.
You know?
It's good to save yourself.
Yeah, save yourself, you know? Go and put 10% of the energy you put into everybody else into yourself, and you'd be surprised what you get out of it, you know? You get a better life. But, you know, we're all worth it. We all bleed red. You know? And we get one life. Here's another thought. If you wait to go to heaven, what if we're here already now? We just don't know. Because going by the pamphlets I've seen put in my mail box, it looks pretty familiar. So what if?
Yeah. Garden, nice trees, sea shines out. It's all of this need that we could experience.
You know? They talk about these sort of things, you know, that's what it could be like. So, well, what if we're here now? There was a friend of mine said to me, you know, what if we're here now, Wayne? And we missed the opportunity. I said, yeah, you could have, it's a bit of a fall on it, mate. You know, but at the end of the day, look, whether you're religious or not, you know, it's paradise, right? And when there's all this talk about the world's stuffed. No, it's not. Just some people's attitudes in it are. You know, and it depends on who you listen to and who your circle is as to what your life's like. You know?
So, yeah. When it sounds like at one point you were coping with alcohol and drugs and then you've almost had an epiphany or an experience or you've been exposed to something that has completely jolted you out of this mind state to help to get you to the point where you're going really well now. When was that? And tell us about it.
Well, it's 5 years ago. and Granny up for talking to a lady called Karen LeBreton, who run the alcohol and drug program for Tiafina Greymouth. She ended up running RATA for Hokitika and Greymouth, but now works in Australia. Anyway, I just went to support a couple of friends who were doing the Tiafina program, even though I was drinking myself, and had to chat with lady, and she goes, I didn't realise she knew me from school and from Murrow High School in Shirley in Christchurch here. And she said, oh, would you like a job? After having a 15-minute conversation. And I thought, well, yeah, I actually would like a job because at least they'd get me away from what I'm bloody well doing at home. You know, sitting there just drinking piss all day long and popping pills is what I was doing. And anyway, I realised that I had some value from her conversation. And I don't think I've ever felt that before. Not like that anyway, you know. And I realised that all the negative part of my life has now done, you know, a 360, and now is the tools I can use to give someone else some guidance, or you know, not tell them what to do, because you can't tell people what to do. You know, they'll do what they want to do anyway. But, you know, just to put your story out there, I guess, and lived experience and say, rightio, well, that didn't work for me and clearly hasn't worked for you. And but this is kind of working for me, but, you know, have it, you grab that and run with it and hold it and make it your own. But, yeah, definitely Greymouth. Definitely Karen and Breton was the turning point. And I'm like, was I coping with alcohol and drugs prior? A few years ago, I would have said, yeah, I was, but I'd have been talking shit, really, because at the end of the day, like, no, I wasn't coping, because if I was, I'd still be on them, and I'd still be doing what I was doing, but it didn't work. But what I really did, when I look back in hindsight, is I just masked the shit I didn't deal with. And you know, like anything, you know, if you have something a little while, well, it works for a while, but you've got to increase it, so, you know, you get the tolerance shit coming into it as well, and, you know, and I mean, more ain't merrier, that's for sure. Yeah, but it just brings more trouble.
And then,
yeah,
you moved to Christchurch,
but it's the beach. Yeah, I got really unwell, decided to tap out, decided to kill myself up, the coast road in Greymouth at the Strongman Memorial Mine was where I chose. That was the spot I chose to drive my ute off the cliff. That was my plan. But lucky for me, unlucky for a friend of mine, a young guy Ben, who's 18, took his life in Greymouth, and I got a phone call saying that they're about to turn his life support off. And so that exposed my pain in front of some friends, or in front of a bunch of people, but only one person picked up on it. And she questioned me. Just said, you know, are you okay, mate? You know? Well, I wasn't. So I couldn't hide it. And that saved my life. That's the truth. Yeah. So, I decided that I wanted to live and said to my friends, you know, bloody help. Yeah, help. Yeah, so they did. So, I decided that if they're going to help me, I'd better help myself. But I'd do it differently. So I went and sat on Compton Beach and I had a big think about just what I thought was a shit life, and realised that What I actually said to myself was, what did I contribute to this shit life? You know, what was my input? And then you know, I come to the conclusion that realistically, probably 99.9% of the time, I gave myself permission to do whatever I wanted, even if I knew the outcome. So therefore, you know, who's the most responsible person for myself in my life is still, I've had so much shit. I am. Because I always said yes. But I knew I should have said no. So, I had a chance to myself in Cobden Beach 5 years ago when I got, you know, suicidal and got busted. I had a good conversation with myself about, all right, what are you going to do about it? You know, so in my mind, I thought, well, how about I'll just go with everything at being 150% honest with myself, you know, no lies. So never let myself off the hook for bullshit, you know. So I used to be quite a shit talker in my time. I remember being a young fella, and I also recognised that what that really was about was trying to fit in. I was always cracking jokes and shit and that. Yeah, but then again, I was not confident either, so I'd hide behind the jokes, like, you know, people do with mental health. You know, I was a classic one for that. If I got you laughing for how long, you'd never ask me how I was. Well, I'm clever, really, isn't it? Think about it. But so is self-destructive too. Because when someone does that, when I was doing that, you close the door for conversation. That's the whole idea behind it, right? And then, you know, it's a mask. And, you know, Robin Williams is a classic case of it. He said, we're only given a little spark of madness, don't lose it. And I believe what he said by that was, don't lose your inner child. Always have fun.
I have.
Mind the loop, Kent. It always let your hair down, mate.
There's not much I can do about that personally now. But I have a photo of myself on my desk from when I was 6 years old. And it's me standing with a soccer ball with a massive smile on my face.
Yeah.
And I only ever really look at it when I'm not feeling very good. And I do exactly what you talked about is remind myself that little happy little boy that just wants to be loved and to have a good life is still there.
Oh, super important.
He's still there.
Don't get me wrong. When I'm drawing that beach, I'm 10 years old most of the time. You know, I'm standing here thinking like a 10-year-old, just having fun. I can't get told off. I'm doing nothing wrong. With beach art, you can't make a mistake because you can always cover it with something else. Or you can stamp it out with your jandle and go again, because I often erase stuff because I'm dyslexic and I get things so mucked up. I'm misleading out all the time. I'm stuck at a huge letters and I feel, you know, like a dick and go and stamp it out and go again, but that's just life, right? And I realise that I do spell things wrong, so why make it a problem for myself? There's no point. If I can fix it, it was never a problem in the first place. Not that you got to fix things, but older, however you want to put it, you know.
And you lay down this beautiful art, and some of it's quite profound, and there are some thoughts and meanings and messages that you're getting out of your head onto the sand. And then a short while later, the ocean comes in and washes it all away. Is that therapeutic in itself?
And absolutely. And where else in the world do you know of someone that has an automatic eraser? And then, you know, I did a interview with Jason Gunn, it was called Gift to the Sea, I did a video thing anyway called Gift to the Sea, and it was amazing about, like, just say for instance, like, you've lost a loved one and I'll do something on the beach for you, and what I'll tell you is that look at it as like a healing. Look at it as that the ocean is happy to take some of that away for you. You know? Take some of that pain away, really. And it really is a gift to the sea, I believe. But the washing away part, I love it. I absolutely love it. People think I get upset, but I never do. Never, ever, ever. Unless I don't get a photo Oh, don't get me wrong. I'll run up there and a few times and just about got a photo and someone stopped talking to me and I turn around, it's gone, or half of it's gone. Then I have a rant in my head. Don't worry about that. You know, because it's frustrating, you know. But, you know, I want to take a photograph so I can show people because that's where the enjoyment really is. I can draw on sand and it's fun for me, but it's really good to share it. And then someone else gets to lift their spirits as well. That's when it's a win-win. That's the most valuable.
That's a beautiful gift that you have, Wayne, and thanks you very much for sharing it with us.
Oh, it's good fun. It's good fun, you know. You just, you know, we've got to take control of our own mental health, right? And we're, you know, we're in control of our own destiny and in control of most of our thoughts. And we can certainly alter our thoughts, that's for sure, by what we do and who we hang around. You know, look, we get one life, eh, Kent? You know, and we have to make the most of it. And it is a bloody gift, and not all days are shit, but not all days are good. But, you know, so long as we're all chipping away to make our own lives slightly better, bit by bit, then we'll look back upon them one day and go, wow, we actually have come a long way. You know, I have my moments where I go, oh, God, I feel like the same old, you know, mucked up guy. And I go, hang on a sec here, mate. You're 5 years sober. You haven't touched a pill since then either. You've had no little sneakies behind anybody's back. You know damn well that in your own head that you haven't been a sneaky prick at all. You know, had nothing behind anything, you know. I'm conscious of having a pie that's had bloody wine cooked in it, you know what I mean? And I know the alcohol cooks of it, I'm aware of that. But in my head, you know, it's like, ah, no, you know. Just things like that, you know. The little things are massive. Yeah. Oh, I could talk for hours about mental health, mate. Jesus, you know, and I'd love to go into depth about it. Like, you know, the suicidal thinking and what people hear, you know, what to be aware of, that they get really, really depressed. That, hey, if you actually hear, hey, Wayne, you're a bit of a piece of shit, mate, no one's going to miss you, to understand that's normal, and you can tell that thought to piss off. Do you know what I mean? I'd love to get into that sort of stuff, like into the real nitty-gritty of it all. Yeah, we're really, really, what it really goes on in people's heads when they're feeling completely mucked up. I believe that, now look, I can't say 100%, but surely 99% of people really, really don't want to commit suicide at all. They just simply want their shit in the head to stop going around and around. They want a goddamn mental health holiday.
Yeah, which is why overwhelmingly most attempts of self-harm are not ultimately successful because we don't want to die.
No, oh yeah, you're right.
We just want the shit to stop.
That's right. When I meet those people, I say to them, I'm so glad you're like me, you're shit at killing yourself. You know? And, you know, don't give up your day job, you know what I mean? Because, yeah, you're clearly not good at that. But there's a reason why, you know? Oh, like, I feel for everybody that's gone taking their lives and anybody that's affected by it. That ripple effect's so real. Yeah, and my word is to anybody out there that's listening, eh? If you're feeling mucked up, talk about how you feel. Don't go back and sit behind closed doors and think it's going to go away. It won't. It'll amplify in your head and you'll start to possibly believe that you probably are better off dead, which is actually absolute bullshit. You know, remember, if you're sitting in the dark and you're feeling alone and you think no one gives a damn, especially if you think no one gives a damn about you, I'm talking to the person sitting in the back of their room going, Wayne, we ain't talking about me. Well, bullshit. I bloody oath I am. Because I was you. You know? Yeah. Never give up on your life. Never, ever give up. If you're having a shit time and you think no one's listening, well, you contact me.
It's been a really rewarding experience having a chat with you. Wayne, thank you so much.
Well, I feel like it's been a little bit over the place because I'm like that. But I mean, you know, the message is, you know, if you're feeling down, please go and ask for help. If you don't feel like you've been listened to, contact me. I'll hear you. I'll hear what you've got to say. I'll repeat what you said and I'll help you make some sense of it.
You take good care of yourself.
I will do indeed. I'll keep drawing on the beach. And thank you very much for having me on. And you take care too, Kent. Thanks very, very much.
And please make sure you check out some of Wayne's amazing beach art online. Well, this is the final episode of Take It From Us that will be broadcast on Planet FM. From the Take It From Us team, a big thank you.